Next on our is a break, but we are ahead of schedule. So we're going to take item H, and I believe there are no speakers or people who wish to have public comment on item H. This is the trial court special funds allocations for fiscal year 2012-2013. I invite David Yamasaki, as well as Zlatko Theodorovich, and Stephen Chang.
Yeah, in the pile. I gotta find him.
Yeah. Is it Cyrus?
Wait, is the 2% reserve, is that the issue here? Wait. Is this the right item?
That's the other one. I have to go to that.
That comes later.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Whoops.
Much later.
Yeah. What's the call?
Yeah. That's fine. He's coming. It's all right.
The call is going. Okay.
Yeah. H. It's the trial court special funds. There we go.
Yes.
Good morning, Chief, members of the council. I was back there looking for Zlatko and never found him. Fortunately, he's here. So I'm appearing on behalf of Judge Lori Earle, who unfortunately had another obligation and asked for me to sit in for her. I'll try to deliver the message, certainly not at the same level of eloquence as she would have, but I'll do my best. I want to give you a little bit of background for the information that you're going to hear today. Last month, there was a convening of the subcommittee that was formed to review the expenditures that draw from the Trial Court Trust Fund and the Improvement and Modernization Fund. And in that endeavor, we met for 2 days in Sacramento, 27th and 28th, and had an opportunity to listen to very, very informative information. The members of our committee consisted of Judge Earle, Judge Clay from Alameda, Judge DeVore, Judge Lee Edmond, and Judge Richard Loftus, as well as court executives Jeannie Cowell, Kimberly Flenner, Stephen Nash, Brian Taylor, Jack Clark, and myself. And I will tell you that the information that we received was extremely well presented, Judge Jarre, by your staff. They did a fantastic job of advocacy, as well as providing us with very, very detailed information that helped our subcommittee formulate conclusions and ultimately make recommendations to the Trial Court Budget Working Group relative to the funding levels that were ultimately addressed. Some of the recommendations were a preservation of the funding levels that we had previously, but also the recommendations included reductions. Fortunately, the information that we had helped us make those decisions, but unfortunately, some of the decisions that we had to make were very, very difficult. And at this time, I'm going to ask Zlatko to go through the information that we reviewed.
Good morning, Chief, members of the council. Yes, we're here to discuss the trial court trust fund allocations, as well as the State Trial Court Improvement and Modernization Fund allocations. The council has the statutory authority to allocate these funds for the needs of the trial courts and the programs and projects that support the trial courts. The recommendations that we'll be walking through represent the work of the Trial Court Budget Working Group, as David has described, as well as the work of the Expenditure Subcommittee and the work that it did on two different occasions, both looking at Trial Court Trust Fund expenditures as well as the Improvement and Modernization Fund. So the first recommendation, based on this work, is to allocate to each trial court a share of $58.8 million of funds that we have found to offset reductions that were taken in the Budget Act, of which we have $25.3 million that we can distribute within our existing budget authority, meaning the level of funding that we have appropriated in the Budget Act. We still have an opportunity to spend $25 million of revenues that we've found as part of the Trial Court Trust Fund. However, there is a balance of that, the $33.7 million, that we do not have authority to spend, and we have to ask the Department of Finance and the legislature to spend that money. There is a provision 4 in the Budget Act that allows for us to request those funds and that we can then spend it based on their authority and approval. Just to recap how we generated this money, we have $41 million in ending, as they say, unrestricted fund balance as a result of year-end expenditures being reconciled as well as revenues. There's additional revenues in the trust fund as compared to what was anticipated this spring. We also have $12.5 million in jury reimbursement that we are able to redirect, $4.3 million in savings related to V2 and V3, and a one-time $1 million funding related to a replacement of screening stations. So that sort of comprises the funds. And if you recall, back in July, we had some concern expressed by the Department of Finance about whether or not our numbers were solid. Well, we've provided them that information, and it's the revenues are there from the prior year, and the expenditures are clear. So we feel like those numbers are good, valid numbers. I would note that it does not include any restricted funds, either by statute or by council, including it does not include any funds for court interpreter costs, as was previously discussed at the council meetings. So recommendation one with the $58 million is that it be allocated based on each court's share of the beginning 12-13 allocation. This is a methodology that we've done for the 2% reserve when we did that back in August. Clearly, as I mentioned before, we do have to ask the Department of Finance for allocation of a share of that funding, the $33 million. So we would ask then as part of the recommendation that you authorize us to request of the Department of Finance that additional authority for expenditures. I don't know if it's the pleasure of the council if you want to discuss each of the recommendations, or would you rather have me go through each of them, and then we can vote on them as we go or after I've completed the presentation?
I suggest you go through them.
Okay, very good. The next issue relates to a statutory change in which it authorizes courts to charge a $30 fee for civil proceedings for court reporters in civil proceedings that last less than 1 hour. The statute provides that this funds are restricted and can only be used for the services for official court reporters in civil proceedings. The recommendation of the Trial Court Budget Working Group is that those funds be allocated based on the courts that collect the revenues. So their one option was that it be distributed pro rata to all the courts, regardless of whether or not they generate any revenues, or return it back to the court that generated the fees. So that is the issue. That, again, is subject to approval by the Department of Finance because this is new revenues that are not within our expenditure authority. So this, again, we'd also request that you authorize us to request to the Department of Finance authority to spend those additional revenues. Are there any questions at this point before I go on? I don't want to get through them.
Do you have any sense about the position of the Department of Finance or the legislature about going back and asking for these authorities?
I think maybe that would be a worthy discussion to get through the whole process, and then we can answer that question. In terms of technical questions about the numbers, it's just
Judge Kaufman.
Zlatko, let me ask you a question. So the recommendation of the Trial Court Budget Working Group was that the $30 fee be returned to the trial court that collected it.
Correct.
As opposed to being put into the pool,
right,
and distributed pro rata.
Correct.
What was the rationalization for that? And the question I'm asking is, is a different one, is that there seems to be no bright line as to what fees get put into the pool and what fees stay locally. I thought we were, most fees are brought up to the pool and distributed pro rata. What was their rationalization? Why did they want to do it this particular fee?
Well, it is restricted funds, and therefore those courts who do the work to generate the revenues was thought it should offset their costs. And courts that aren't collecting the revenues may not have the costs to offset.
So I'm on that committee, and this I thought would be a hotly contested issue. It was not. It was favored by folks that don't collect the money as well, Los Angeles, some of the others. The idea is that there are courts out there that have court reporters in their civil departments, and the only way that they continue to fund those civil court reporters in those departments is by hoping that this fee will cover them. The others are not collecting them because they, frankly, have already gotten rid of their court reporters in their civil departments. So I thought this would be controversy, and gentlemen, you can speak differently, but it was unanimously and rather rapidly looked at as purely a local fee in terms of in the ideology that that it is collected by those courts that are using court reporters, and the ones that aren't collecting, frankly, do not have civil court reporters in those departments.
Well, but we're setting a precedent. In other words, in the past, all fees have gone to the pool, haven't they?
Or
most, and when what fees will stay locally and what fees are going to basically be put into pool and then distributed pro rata? I mean, is there rules or... that's what I'm asking.
Stephen, if you
have. Right now, there are a number of fees that by statute are required to be returned to the courts dollar for dollar, and they're usually related to actual costs, so reimbursement or offsetting of actual costs. And it's a very limited number, and there are none by council policy that are directed back to the courts.
And this $30 fee is not directed back to the court, is
correct.
That correct?
It's merely restricted and can only be spent on that. So to the extent there aren't court reporter costs at a court, this money would be distributed to them and would not be able to be spent on anything but court reporters. So it sort of seems odd that he would provide them the funds and they couldn't spend it on court reporters anything
Judge
else.
Judge Rosenberg.
It's really a matter of equity. The courts that collect it should get it because they need it and they expend money on it. The courts that don't collect it don't have a dog in the fight at all. They don't need it.
Okay.
All right, so those are all the issues related to the trial court trust fund. That's why I took a pause, because we're going to move into the improvement and modernization fund, and it has different issues. The trust fund is the fund that we were looking to help offset trial court costs and reductions, whereas the only a small portion of the improvement and modernization fund work that we're doing would benefit the trial court's offsets. But just to summarize, recommendation three would then be to request to the Department of Finance a $37.7 million of authority made up of the balance of the trial court trust fund funds that we've identified and this additional $4 million of estimated revenues from the court reporter revenues. Okay. Now let's talk about the Improvement and Modernization Fund. This is a newly merged fund of our old improvement fund and modernization fund. Was intended to provide greater clarity in budgeting of the branch so that everybody could see those funds all expended out of one fund, again, to provide greater transparency in budgeting and accountability. Similar to what was done with the trial court trust fund, the budget working group created a subcommittee that reviewed all of the expenditures, as David had mentioned. And one of the goals of that group was to look and address Phoenix Financial Services costs as to where they should be budgeted. One of the EMP recommendations adopted by the council regarding Phoenix was to look at the funding mechanism for Phoenix and whether or not there are some alternatives to having it be funded as a chargeback to the trial courts. So with that, they met, as David said, for 2 days and went over line by line all of those expenditures. There's a fundamental issue that I'd like to raise to the council at this point regarding the long-term funding viability of the Improvement and Modernization Fund. It currently has expenditures greater than its revenues, but because it has a fund balance, money in the bank, it can pay for all of its expenses over the next several fiscal years. We will, though, have to eventually review all of the expenditures out of the Improvement and Modernization Fund because it will eventually be broke and we will need to reduce expenditures. And so to that point, we will be reconvening our subcommittee that looked at all of the expenditures to develop some strategies in dealing with this long-term shortfall and see what options we have to deal with that. So we'll be coming back to you in the future looking at how to stabilize the expenditures out of the Improvement and Modernization Fund. So what we're bringing before you is a recommendation to allocate on a one-time basis $71.9 million from the Improvement and Modernization Fund. That does reflect this, though. It reflects a movement of the Phoenix financial expenditures from the Trocourt Trust Fund into the Improvement and Modernization Fund. This, in effect, would have a benefit to the trial courts as they would no longer have to pay out of their trial court trust fund allocation these costs. It would benefit the trial courts, 57 courts, $6.8 million of reduced costs from their trust fund allocation.
Can I ask? So I understand it. So this would be effective July 1st, 2012. Correct.
We would work through accounting to adjust our expenditures so that it would be charged against the IMF instead of the TCTF.
So basically, if let's assume a court owed, let's say, $10,000-$20,000 for Phoenix for this year, they would not have to pay that.
Correct.
And so we would have 10 or 20, whatever the number was, back into your budget. And
correct.
This money would be paid by that fund, correct?
Right.
So at that point, we close the books on the old way we do Phoenix.
For the intervening period, we can afford that for a couple of years.
Okay,
it contributes to the problem that I discussed in terms of the upside-down nature of the IMF.
What about, you said 57 courts. Now, is there a court or courts that have not paid their assessment?
There is a court that hasn't paid theirs.
What's the proposal about dealing with that issue?
I think I'd defer to
The question is, whatever they owe, that would go back into the pot?
If they were to make that payment, it would be, I think I'd defer to Curtis in terms of Soderlund as to how he might respond to how they would deal with any repayment.
So, yes, there's one court that for 3 years has not made any reimbursements for the Phoenix Financial part of the program. I think to address your question, there'd be several ways of doing it from an accounting perspective. We could do something in the current year, or we could, if monies were paid, like for the 11-12 year, as an example, then we could rebate those monies back to 57 courts, so there would be a gain or an offset, if you will, to those expenses.
What's your recommendation? What's the best way to let's close the books on the old way we do business and let's move forward, which is, I think, is a much better way of doing business.
It's a pleasure of the council. It's really an accounting technical issue. In terms of which way do you want to go in terms of addressing the non-payment for the 11-12 year or the two other prior fiscal years?
Yeah, it seems to me that's kind of a staff issue. That is it, without identifying the court, is it a very small court or is it a very large court?
It's a court in Southern California, if you will.
Well, gee, I wish San Diego would stay.
It's Los Angeles.
I know. Okay. Well, and that was a decision that was made with full knowledge by the trial court budget working group, correct? Okay.
Correct.
So, thank you.
If I could just add also, going back to the Phoenix expenditure, it specifically addresses the accounting component that all of the courts participate in. There are some courts who don't have the technical expertise or systems to accommodate other elements which are not part of this redirection, but rather still will follow that mechanism of contributing towards that particular expenditure.
And for clarification, what we're talking about is the HR payroll component of it, which seven courts are on, would still be on the chargeback methodology.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. So I just want to make some highlights with respect to the $71.9 million. It does reflect including $6.7 million of Phoenix costs. But that were off, those were offset by $1.6 million of reductions to other programs that we saw and were able to take a reduction. So on net, we have about a $5.1 million increase to the overall allocation as compared to last year's allocation. But again, that's driven by the Phoenix increase, partly offset by other smaller reductions. One thing we also wanted to note was that the budget working group did recognize that there was some uncertainty in one particular program, the litigation management program. And so to the extent that there were any needs for additional resources, rather than having to go back through the budget working group, it was recommended that it can come back to the council to ask any increases for that program. Just to remind you of what the IMF does pay for, it pays half of the funding goes for IT costs. There again, the financial and financial services, complex civil litigation, education programs. So there's a lot of programs, important programs to the trial courts that are provided out of the IMF. You can see there's additional issues there. And this is the breakdown dollar-wise. I think I want to do point out that almost half of the expenditures in the IMF are for information and technology services. And so when we look at the long-term costs and expenditures out of the IMF, from a terms of just where all the dollars are, those dollars in the Information Technology Services Office are substantial and will have direct service impacts to the trial court. So what we've committed is the budget working group is to work with the tech committee to make sure that we're not just doing this as a budget exercise, but that we're working with all the impacted areas to really evaluate what opportunities we have within that fund to make any sorts of budget adjustments. So with respect to the management of this fund, we discussed a number of issues in terms of how to properly administer the fund. As I mentioned, the council has the authority to allocate the funds. But given that there were some reductions taken in the various budget areas, there was a sense that there should be some flexibility provided to the programs so that they can address any of the reductions. For example, there were cuts to the information technology area. There were some reductions to education. And while we discussed those in specifics, we concluded that there should be some level of flexibility. But then we also were concerned that we would be coming back to the council on a regular basis asking for minor adjustments. So the recommendation is that the council consider delegating to the appropriate entity the authority to make adjustments between programs and projects so that you could consider that as an opportunity to help more effectively manage the fund. We just didn't think that it made sense that on small adjustments that we should be coming back to the council on a regular basis. And we thought that that would just be a sort of more efficient management of the program.
Where should it be delegated if that were done?
Well, statute does authorize the council to delegate to the administrative director.
Okay.
But we did not, as a budget working group, want to identify that. We wanted just to raise that as an issue for the council and the council deliberate on the appropriate, if it chose to make such a delegation. And if there are any questions about the issues of delegation, we've discussed it with Mary Roberts, if there's anything that that they can ask. So to the extent that the council does decide to delegate authority to another entity, we have some recommendations that we'd like you to consider with respect to transparency and management of that. First, we'd like to put some limits on the amount that could be adjusted so that it's not just complete elimination and funding of programs through this delegation. We think that it's important that you understand that the authority in law talks about delegating with appropriate guidelines. And so one of the recommendations will be, as it stands now, we do not have new guidelines for this merged fund. We had guidelines for the improvement fund when it existed on its own and the mod fund as it existed on its own, but we did not have do not have newly created delegation and guidelines for the new fund. So we should work with providing you some options in terms of delegation and the guidelines for that delegation. Next, we'd like that you'd ask us to report back on any adjustments to the allocations so that you're aware as a council as to what was changed. Again, that's helpful in terms of ability to understand what programs thought should be changed in the budget so that it's, again, a matter of transparency for everybody to see so that you know how you start from the initial allocation to the end of the allocation based on adjustments done by the designee. And finally, we do need to have more formalized and final internal guidelines for the administration of the IMF to the extent that you decide to delegate to some other entity for its management. So those are all the recommendations that we have.
Can we open it up to questions or comments?
What? Can I first respond to the question that Commissioner Alexander raised? And this just deals with the first three recommendations, not those after that. But I did have a meeting with Ana Montesantos and her staff, and she specifically called with reference to the first three recommendations. And she wanted to strongly, quite frankly, express what her concerns and the governor's concerns were that had been relayed to her about those first three trial court budget working group recommendations. She started out by telling me that, in essence, she didn't have anything new to explain to me, that, in essence, it was the same things that she had said when she was here in August. And so I am somewhat just repeating what she told us then. But her concerns and the governor's concerns were threefold. And first, primarily, she stressed that she wasn't in any way indicating we didn't have the discretion on one of those funds to make that appropriation, but that she didn't feel that this was the appropriate time to do this, and she was recommending that we would hold that off until our January Judicial Council meeting, when she felt and her office felt, based upon their analysis, that we would all have a better and more complete picture as to what the actual revenues were and what the actual expenditures were. They had reviewed the report. They had analyzed the report. They weren't convinced, based upon their evaluation of those figures, that what we had come up with were exactly correct and that those would be what they would be in November, December, or January. And so her recommendation is that we wait to consider to make any discretionary appropriation or to request them to make any further appropriation under their authority until January, when we had a more complete picture of what those funds actually were. Again, she said, I'm not in any way indicating that you shouldn't at some time make a discretionary call, but that really that discretion shouldn't be exercised at this time and that we should do that in January. She also repeated again exactly with what she had indicated when she was here in August, and that was that the redirection was being proposed while trial courts still had a significant reserve maintained in their individual courts, a number of them, that the redirection was being proposed without being based upon individual trial court needs, and that, again, the purpose of the governor's budget and what was agreed to by the legislature was that the focus should be on the local courts and their efforts to plan and budget within the ongoing cuts. With regards to the $30 court reporter fee, she felt that that was something that should be decided in conjunction with the new working group that will evaluate that in consistency with the Trial Court Funding Act on a statewide basis. So I really believe, based upon her concerns and what she expressed were the governor's concerns and the important relationship that we have with the governor and the Department of Finance and the relationship that we want to continue with them during this changing fiscal time and our partnership with them, that we should consider postponing those decisions on the first three recommendations until January.
Judge So.
Jody, would that include also the 6.769 in item 4?
That item would be consistent with the concern expressed by Department of Finance for the first three items, yes.
So that changes... So just for clarification, but not the So we would take the 6.7 from the 71.923 because the balance of that does not concern or implicate the concerns raised by Department of Finance.
Yes.
Okay. Judge Ellsworth.
So I have a couple of concerns about the delay. The first concern I have is that we have a trial court budget working group that not only has worked and grappled and suffered through these issues, but they also did a subcommittee that went line by line and came up with some very well reasons, ideas that to present to us. And delaying this may create some real problems with operations for some of those courts as well. And one of the things Justice Miller indicated is that Anna has told us that she wants local courts to start looking to local changes, and yet on the $30 fee, that clearly, and I'll tell you, Riverside's, I'm not talking on behalf of Riverside, but Riverside's clearly one of the courts that has civil court reporters, and we have money that we received along with others that we based a decision to continue with court reporters on the prospect of that fee, for example. So if, in fact, we delay on that, or there will be many courts, and I'm not speaking on behalf of Riverside, I'm talking about all of the courts that are collecting that diligently, who will discontinue that, and that fee will really not, they'll end up like Los Angeles, I think, collected $30 because they don't have court reporters in those civils for an hour or less. So I find it, with regard to just to that slice of the pie, a little bit strange if they want us to delay when, in fact, they have told us local money stays local, 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 and that fee is attributed to that. So I think that the trial court budget working group considered and were very, Zlatko presented very well the kind of fine line we had to walk with the trial court budget working group. And so I guess I'm going to Dave Wesley this say that I think that the delay could cause some problems, and I think we should trust and take these recommendations.
Judge Rosenberg, then Judge O'Malley.
I think the new information that was obtained through the Director of Department of Finance is something we do need to consider. A delay to January, I don't think will negatively affect any court, and I think as a matter of comedy, we must consider that. I would ask that any motion on this be separated, because I really view the $30 fee as a separate item, and I don't know that that should be delayed. I think that's a matter of equity. The courts are expending the money for the reporters, I'm concerned that the courts that are doing that, if they don't get the $30 revenue returned to them, will have some significant impacts on the court operations. So I'd ask that the $30 fee issue be separated. I understand delaying the issue with regard to the millions that are involved in number one and three.
So I have a question and then a point to make. The question is, the $30 fee is not now going to the individual courts, correct?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what
the $30 fee.
Right. It's being distributed. It's just being collected in the trial court trust fund and not been distributed anywhere at this point.
So, question like to Judge Ellsworth or these other courts that are hoping to keep court reporters in your civil departments till January, you haven't been getting it up to now. And so does this mean that you will cease court reporters in civil, or can you?
Can I ask one further question, though? Don't they have, we're just requesting, they have to approve it.
Right. We have to request the authority to spend the money, and then the council has the authority to allocate it in the fashion.
But they have to give us the permission.
Correct. We don't currently have.
Okay. So we're darned if we do and we're darned if we don't. So the question is, it's not a long period to wait. If we allocate the money now, they can just cut us more, and then we have to give it back in some sense. I mean, so my feeling is it's not that long to wait. We all need to see where we're going to be after November and what the budget's going to be. And I just think it would be prudent for us to have the money, hold the money that we have now, and not spend it.
I agree with Judge O'Malley. And Judge Ellsworth, you've convinced me the $30 fee should be a local fee. I don't have an issue with that right now. I did it a few minutes ago, and I don't now. I think the bigger issue is I don't want to win the battle and lose the war. In other words, with the Department of Finance, we're starting down a new road with them, with that the working group that you're on and Judge Rosenberg's on, et cetera, Justice Hull's chairing. I wouldn't want to walk into that meeting saying to them, we're snubbing our noses at you at the first instance we had a chance to. I think we're better off working with them, trying to come up with a global solution as opposed to a simple solution over a $30 fee. I think it's if we can get past that barrier, the $30 fee, we can deal with the January. And we're talking about 2 months, really. And so for 60 days, to try to go into that meeting with good faith, to me, makes a lot more sense than the thumbing our nose at them and saying, we're going to take $30.
Justice Miller.
So I have a motion with regards to recommendations 1 through 4, including the court reporter fee, that we delay those until the Judicial Council meeting in January.
Second.
Okay, so I see a second by Justice Baxter, Judge DeAlba, Judge O'Malley. I heard a second by Jim Fox.
Well,
I believe the matter's been discussed thoroughly.
Can I ask one question?
Yes, Commissioner Alexander.
The rest of it go.
What does that apply to, everything in number one or just the $33 million?
Applies to everything.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Again, offsetting.
Nay.
One. Thank you. Matter carries. That leaves recommendation number 5, and depending on that, then 6, 7, and 8. Right. Well,
Chief, if I may.
Who's calling?
Zlatko.
Zlatko.
Yeah. Since the motion in was to not approve any of the improvement fund and modernization fund allocations, then the discussion of delegation at this point doesn't seem worthy.
Well, that's fine. And I wanted to ask you whether or not the committee had considered perhaps a combination of people. I know it has in the plural someone like the administrative director of the court and the chair of E&P. Or was there any specific discussion about the delegation?
No. Well, it started with the directors of the offices, and then we thought there should be some guidance, say in the case of CEJR, that the CEJR governing committee have some input, or in the case of IT, it would be the office along with the tech committee. But then it started to fall apart when we didn't necessarily have oversight over everybody. And then when we got to the end, it was, well, let's talk about the ADOC. And then we even retreated further from and said, let's just let the council discuss it. And we didn't want to give a firm recommendation as a budget working group. That was the evolution of this.
Thank you, Justice Baxter.
I would think that the delegation should really go to the ADOC and as well as the chair of E&P working together. And they, in turn, would be consulting with the appropriate divisions or agencies.
Thank you. Judge Ellsworth.
I think that would satisfy. What the concern was that in all of this, and I think that the SEC report and many different things kind of folded into this, that they really, our group, I believe, really wanted to have the council to be a part of the holder of those keys. And I think that solution, having that co-kind of delegation, would really speak to some of the concerns. So I think that's a great way to do it.
What I'm hearing overarchingly is you're saying without, Zlatko, you're saying without activity in the IMF fund now, then this is not necessarily imminent before us?
Correct.
Not right.
The only issue, and I know you've voted, is that the motion could have been to separate the Phoenix charge, since it's part of that issue, and still authorize the allocation of the $65 million that is for normal operations. That's not within any of the concerns of the Department of Finance. That's our normal cost, normal program, not identified for redirection and offset. It's just a normal expenditure. So one variation could have been to peel the Phoenix movement out of a recommendation 4, and then we then could move on to how did you want to delegate any authority and oversight over the IMF expenditures.
I think it makes sense in light of the comments that were received by Justice Miller from the Department of Finance that the entirety of this issue be deferred to January.
That's a motion.
That's a motion.
Second by Judge Rosenberg. By Mark Robinson as well.
Well, they just keep
all in favor of deferring this to January when the other matters will be considered. Aye. Say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. Matters deferred.
They just continue to do it.
No.
Thank you for the presentation. It represents, I know, much work and negotiation and discussions with the Trial Court Budget Working Group, and we appreciate this, and we look forward to revisiting it in January. We're going to take our 15-minute recess now. It's 10:15. We'll stand in recess until about 10:30.